We're doing Tehillim. We're up to the 42nd chapter. And this is a fantastic chapter about the soul's yearning for closeness to Hashem, the soul's yearning to be in the land of Israel. And the chapter begins, L'mnatzeach maskil livnei Korach. The chapter begins with an introduction that this is a song that was written to educate us, to teach us how to pray about redemption, and it is given to the sons of Korach. And the question is, what do those words, it is given to the sons of Korach, what do they mean? So there are multiple interpretations among the commentaries. We'll begin with the most classical, Rashi's interpretation. Rashi says, we know that Korach was arguing against Moshe. Korach developed a rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu. And his sons, Asir, Elkanah, and Avi Asaf, his sons initially took sides with him. And then as the quarrel brewed and as things developed, they switched sides. And although Korach was swallowed by the earth, his sons remained up on top. And the pasuk in the Torah says that, "Uvnei Korach lo meitu." Korach's own sons did not die. And over there, as their father is being swallowed up, and God is proving that Moshe emet v'Torato emet, God is giving out tremendous proof. Moshe is telling the truth, and the Torah is the truth. Over there, as their father and his their mother and their family and all their wealth, Korach was the wealthiest Jew. He had 1,000 camels just to carry the keys to his storage houses of wealth. All of that was swallowed up. And then and there, Korach's own children had prophecy, and they said the following song. They had prophecy about the exile, the destruction of the temple, and the kingdom of the house of David. And there, the sons of Korach said the following song. So that's Rashi's interpretation. According to Rashi, this song of Tehillim dates back to the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, to that day when their father and mother and all their wealth was destroyed. That's when they had the prophetic vision and they said this song. That's Rashi's interpretation. The Radak suggests that really this is composed by David HaMelech. And when it says Livnei Korach, it means that this song was given over to Korach's children because Korach was a Levite and his descendants were Levites who sang in the temple. So David HaMelech composed these songs for those descendants of Korach, for those Levites to sing. But in truth, it is a song composed by David HaMelech. Why is it called Livnei Korach? Because Bnei Korach were the famous ones in the family. Asir, Elkanah, Avi Asaf, they were the great prophets in the family. So they were known as Bnei Korach. So really, they were descendants further down the road. But the whole family is called Bnei Korach because Bnei Korach were the great prophets. That's how the Radak explains. And some say that this chapter, David HaMelech said when he was in exile among the Philistines. So that's why he wished he could be back. Remember, towards the end, as King Saul was chasing him after David's whole family was murdered by the Moabites. So David at some point realized that he has no choice. If he sticks around Judean territory, one day Saul might catch up to him. So David, seeing no choice, goes over to the other side. He goes into Philistine territory. And he tells the Philistine king, I want to join forces with you. And for a period, he lives around the capital. And later on, he tells the king, I don't want to burden you. You always have to provide food for me and my soldiers. I'll go out and I'll attack the Jews. And that way I'll sustain myself. And in truth, he would attack Amalek and attack others. the enemies of the Jews, but he would ensure that no one would escape to tell the tale. And he'd bring back loot for the king, and he'd tell the king, look at all the loot we brought you from the Jews we attacked today. Really, he wasn't attacking Jews. Really, he was attacking the Jews' enemies. But he sold the king a load of goods, and the king bought it. And at that point, David couldn't enter the rest of Israel. He was in Philistine territory, and that's when he wrote this chapter about how his heart longs to be back in Israel. That's one interpretation here. And this chapter was composed for the Levites to sing, specifically the Levites who were descendants of Korach. But the pshat that the Radak prefers is that the chapter was really composed for us. The chapter was composed for the future generations that would be exiled and would find their souls yearning for the land of Israel. And for those generations, he composed this chapter. It's interesting that from the foundation of the first temple, we knew it would be destroyed. We had a prophecy when we left exile, when we left Egypt. It said, Ad yavor amcha Hashem, Ad yavor am zukanita. The Jewish people had a prophetic vision then and there as they're leaving Egypt, before they even entered the land of Israel, that they'd be exiled. They're leaving Egypt, headed to Israel, and they're seeing a prophecy that this entrance to the land of Israel, well, it's not going to be infinite. It has an end point. It's finite. And when we start building the second temple, so the prophet also tells them, the prophet in Haggai tells them, it's a fantastic thing you're doing, and it's going to have an end point. This isn't the ultimate building. There's still more to come. It will be destroyed, and there will be an exile. So David HaMelech is not the first to speak about the exile. Although the temple hasn't yet been built, the people haven't reached the golden era of Jewish presence in the land of Israel. But a tradition they had already from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu that we would be exiled. And so David is composing this chapter about being in exile. So we have three pshatim here. Either it is the sons of Korach prophesizing about the exile on the day that their father is swallowed, or it is David who composed this chapter for the Levites, specifically the sons of Korach, when he himself was in exile in Philistine territory. Or it is a chapter that David composed about the Jewish people, although he says it in singular tense, but it's really referring to the whole of the Jewish people. When we would be in exile, we would be able to say this chapter about how difficult it is to be in exile and how our soul longs to return to the land of Israel. Yes?
Question. The first time we say that we need Israel, we was outside the country, outside the Eretz Israel. The second time we could also say that. For me, it's a little bit too hard to understand. When I was outside the country, when I'm going outside, I feel strange. When I'm here, I'm being part, but we're not complete part because I'm not born now. It doesn't matter for me. And all life, I'll always be sneak and I'll always be here outside for Israel. But I'm part of Israel. And this conception, talk about this, or something more. Clearly, it's something more deep. But the person of which one by one, we need a passage for that, for this difference outside, when you're going outside, visit our relatives, or wherever one do outside, it's not, people see was strange. Even that we're burning the country that we visit. Now, in here, we also, that. Not complete, but there is something
here.
Can you talk about
this? Well, I don't think it's relevant to the Tehillim, so maybe we could discuss it later.
Okay.
Okay? Yes?
What is the significance of each parrot that doesn't have Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei in it?
I don't know. So we'll begin, and as usual, we say it with the tune and then explain. Lam natzeach maskil libnei Korach. To the conductor, the following song was composed to teach us, and it was given to the hands of the sons of Korach. Either they were the ones who conducted the song, or they were the ones who composed the song. And the chapter begins. Ke'ayal ta'arog alafi ke'mahim, ke'in nafshi ta'arog eilecha Elohim. Ke'ayal ta'arog. Ayal is maybe a ubex, maybe it's a ram, something from that family. And when she doesn't have enough water, she raises her head towards heaven and lets out a wail. And just like a lion has his roar and a bear has his grumble, so too the ram has its expression of voice. And and that's just like you say shoeg to give a roar about a lion, and you say shokek to give a grumble about a bear. You say oreg about an ayal. That's the way his voice is called. Birds we say chirp. So ayalim are orgim. Our sages say over here that the animals all look at the ayal, and when there's no water around, so the animals surround the ayal, so to speak, you be our chaz and you daven for us. And what the ram does is it starts digging, and it sticks its horns into the pit and starts making noises. And Hashem has pity on her, and then from the hole she digs, water starts coming out, which we might say, well, God made it that the ram can dig where there's water, and it knows where to dig, and then the water comes out. But the way Chazal described it is that the animals all come to the ayal when they can't find any water, and they wait to see what it does. And what it does is it digs its pit, and then it starts sticking its horns into the pit and letting out this noise until finally God makes water come out. Now, the ayal travels in the desert, and the ayalim are sometimes so thirsty that they could be seen eating snakes, the Radak says. Now, the ke'ayal ta'arog alafike maim, just as the ayal seeks out the sources of water, the streams of water, so the ayal knows that its life is contingent on the water, and that's why it seeks out sources of water. And it doesn't just seek out a drink, it seeks out an afik mayim, a place where water is streaming. Kain, by the same token, nafshi ta'arog elecha Elokim. My soul yearns for you, Hashem. The metaphor is fantastic. The ayal knows its life is contingent on its finding water. By the same token, my soul knows that its life is contingent on its finding you. And it's a question of seeking you out, as we've discussed many times. Someone once asked the Kutzker Rebbe, where is God? And the Kutzker Rebbe, who was known for his wit, answered, wherever you let him in. But it's a job to let him in. So we seek out Hashem. Yeah, if you seek him, you find him. But you have to seek him. You have to want him. Most of the time, we begrudgingly accept him. Life would be easier if he wouldn't be in the way. That's the nature of a human being. He goes in the supermarket. He sees non-kosher food. He sees things he'd like to do. He'd like to eat. And God's telling him no. So it doesn't feel like he's the source of life. It feels like he's the impediment of life. I don't know. That's a superficial view. It's quite the contrary. That is life. Torah is life. This is life. David HaMelech is on the Madrega. David says, my soul yearns for you. My soul recognizes that just as the ram realizes its life is contingent on the water, and so it seeks out the water, so too my soul seeks you out, Hashem. Samea nafshi le'elohim לאל חי, מתי יבוא ויראה פני אלוהים. דוד המלך says, my soul thirsts for Hashem. My soul thirsts lekel chai, for the living God. He doesn't say, I'm hungry, because a person could live without food for 2 or 3 days. But water is something that a person can't live without. And so he says, Sam'a nafshi, my soul is thirsting lelokim for Hashem lekel chai. Hashem is the source of life. And without that connection to Him, I don't have life. Matay avo, when will I merit to come to the temple, ve'eira'e pnei Elokim, and see the face of Hashem. Now, we know that Hashem is everywhere. You could daven in Chutz Lartz, you could daven in Israel, you could daven at the Kotel, you could daven outside the Kotel. But we also know that there are times and places that affect the revelation of Hashem, that affect the capacity to connect to Hashem. In a minyan, Hashem is more present than out of a minyan. And at the Temple Mount, Hashem is more present, the Shekhinah is more present, is more revealed than elsewhere. David HaMelech says, I yearn for that closeness to be before you at the Temple Mount. Sure, David's talking to Hashem as he says this. It's not that Hashem isn't a part of his life, he is, but David wants more. Sam'a nafshi, my soul is thirsting. And the truth is that everyone's soul is thirsting. The only question is, are we willing to listen to it? I just landed from the United States this morning. So when I was there, Baruch Hashem, I was there for a wedding. When I was there, people who met me at the wedding asked me, when are you going back? So I said, tomorrow. So I said, wow, that's fast. And I said, and when are you going back? So people said, I'm going back home tonight. And I said, no, when are you going back home to Israel? And people stopped and thought, and sheepishly said, you're right. And it struck me how people reacted. Because I always thought people in Chutz Lartz would say, I'm here, my family's here, my business is here, and this is where I belong. But no, not one person said that to me. They all, one person said that to me. Shouldn't say that. One person said that to me. But everyone else, when I said, when are you going back? It struck them. They thought. And then they realized, hey, that is a good question. And I think that's really the way our life goes. We tend to forget that we're thirsting. Just like a person can go all day and not realize he hasn't drank, and suddenly when he sits down to drink, he realizes, hey, I was really thirsty. By the same token, our soul really yearns to be closer to Hashem, but we can ignore it. So David HaMelech gives voice to that feeling that's lying there dormant, till we arouse it. Tzame'a nafshi lelokim, my soul thirsts for Hashem. Lekel chai. Lekel chai. When will I come? Matay avo v'ere pnei Elokim. I called Rav Nevenzal once, and I asked him, it says in the Mishnah, according to the Ritva, this is a Mishnah in the end of Moed Katan, it's for sure Allah and Shulchan Aruch, that if a person hadn't been to the Kotel, to the Temple Mount, in 30 days, so when he comes and sees the Kotel, he should tear his shirt, because we're still mourning. The temple hasn't been rebuilt. The temple is destroyed. So I asked Rav Nevenzal, I noticed that here in Israel, people in Jerusalem don't tear their shirts. And what's the explanation? It's Halacha and Shulchan Aruch. So he said that he discussed it with Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach Zatzal, and I think this was his answer. I don't think this was Rav Shlomo Zalman's answer, but I'm not sure. I don't remember. It's been a number of years since then. He said that if a person lives in Yerushalayim and he could go up to the Temple Mount and he hasn't gone to the Kotel, he hasn't come to visit, he hasn't come close to Hashem in 30 days, when he lives just here in Yerushalayim, so then he obviously doesn't care. Well, if he doesn't care, he doesn't have to tear. Okay? Now we just have to understand who Rav Neventzel is. Rav Neventzel is a Jew who lives, he's the rabbi of the Jewish quarter. He's a big Talmud Chacham. And I heard from people who learned in his yeshiva that every night before he goes home, he stands opposite the western wall, says a chapter of Tehillim, and starts weeping as he looks and sees that the temple is not yet built. So he cares. David HaMelech says, Tzame'a nafshi lelokim, my soul thirsts for Hashem lekel chai, for God who is the source of life. Matay avo, when will I come to the Kotel? When will I come in David's time to the temple? Ve'ira'e pnei elokim, and I will show myself before Hashem. Hayetali dimati lechem yomam v'laila be'mor elai kol hayom ayei Elohecha. David HaMelech says, my bread, day and night, my lechem yomam v'laila was dimati, my tears. My enemies, be'emor elai kol hayom, when my enemies would continuously torment me and say, ayei Elokecha, where's your God? That's what they said all the years. Where is he now? There's a famous story of a Nazi beating one of the rabbis and asking him, do you still feel chosen? How chosen are you now? Do you still think you're the chosen people? And the rabbi looked back at him and said, one thing's for sure, is that you're not. Be'emor elai kol hayom ayei Elokecha. That was the repeated torment that they'd say to us. Where's your God? How come you're suffering like that? Ayei Elokecha, where's your God? Why don't we see him? David HaMelech says, I wept because there was true suffering, the Crusades, the Holocaust. Haitali dimati lechem yomam v'laila. My tear was my food, day and night. Now, Chazal say an interesting line from this pasuk. Chazal say, from this pasuk we learn that when a person is in a tzara, when things are going bad, so they lose their appetite. Chazal say, Haitali dimati lechem yomam v'laila. My tears were my bread day and night. Meaning it's normal that a person loses weight when there's a tzara because they don't have an appetite. The tears are their satiation. Eile ezkera v'eshpecha alai nafshi ki e'evor basach edadein ad beit Elohim bekol rina v'toda. Hamon Chogeg. David HaMelech says, this is what I remember. Eila, the following things are my memories. And this is why my soul is tormented so, to the point where it just wants to go out. Eila is kera v'eshpecha alai nafshi. It is because of these that I remember, and that's why I pour out my soul ki e'evo. When I remember how I used to pass through Jerusalem three times a year, basach, I'd go in chariots that were covered, I'd have shade, edadim, and I would advance slowly to be medadez, the way you walk a child who's learning to walk. The Mishnah discusses, are you allowed to be medadez tatinokot? Are you allowed to teach children to help them to go foot by foot to advance on Shabbos? So David HaMelech says, The following are my memories that cause me to pour out my soul yearning for the return to Zion. I remember how I used to go through Jerusalem with covered chariots. Edadim, I would slowly advance at Beit Elokim till I approached to the temple. And this is again another lesson for us. It's teaching us the respect we're supposed to have when we walk in Jerusalem, when we walk towards the temple, when we walk in a Beis Medrash, when we walk in a Beit HaKnesset. You're not supposed to run around. You're supposed to walk with respect. David HaMelech describes how he would walk so slowly out of respect. He was like a child learning how to walk. They used to make the steps longer than your footstep so that you wouldn't be able to take two steps at a time. You'd have to walk slowly up the steps because that's the way a respectful person walks. They made them longer than a footstep. So you'd take a step up, take a small step, take another step up, take a small step. Each step was wider than you would take a footstep. So you'd have to take another half a step and then take a step up. And a half a step and then a step up. And this was to ensure that people don't run up the steps. This was to ensure that the way people walked was in a respectful manner in the Beit HaMikdash. Right, but it's disrespectful. You're in the house of God. David HaMelech says, "Bekol rina v'toda hamon chogeg." When I'd hear the masses celebrating and giving thanks, that's what I. Those are my memories of Jerusalem. Matish tochachi. David HaMelech is comforting himself, and he says to his own soul, "Why is it that you bend yourself over? Nafshi vatehemi alai." Why is it, my soul, he says to himself, why do you bend yourself over? Why is it that you weep? Hochili le'lohim ki od odenu yeshuot panav. What are you crying about? David says to himself. Turn to God, because there'll still come a time that you'll thank Him for the redemption. And this is the great strength of David HaMelech. The capacity to always see a future. It's not over. There's a future. That's the strength of a leader. The temple is being destroyed. The Roman Empire seems like they've covered the world. There's no coming out from under their strength. You have the Pax Romana. They've conquered North Africa. They've conquered most of Europe. No one can stand up to their legions. They have such discipline. It looks like it's over. Along comes Rabbi Yochanan, the great Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and says there's a future for the Jewish people. And starts making institution after institution. Everyone's lamenting the destruction. He's making institutions. He is the future of the Jewish people. Those were the giants, the greats of Jewish history. The people who were able to see beyond the current destruction, to see a future. And that's the strength of David. David doesn't know of a way out. He's being chased as a rebel. The people, the army is trying to get him down. Now he's on enemy territory. And he doesn't know if he'll ever make it back. The Jewish people are out in exile and they don't know. They don't have a time when they'll come back home. He says to himself, wait a second. Why are you so destroyed? Hochili lelokim, put your hope in Hashem because He still has redemptions to give. He's not all out, so to speak. There's a midrash here that says that David HaMelech was referring to the three destructions. To the three exiles, I'm sorry. The midrash learns Matish Tochachi. Midrash learns, I'm trying to remember the Midrash, just a second. It's quoted here by one of the Mefarshim. I don't remember. I don't remember. There's a medrash here that learns one of the words repeats itself three times here. Here, Matish Tochachi. Three times he's going to tell his soul, why are you so destroyed? And the medrash says that corresponds to the three kingdoms that would stop the service in the temple. And each time the Jewish people call out to Hashem, when they call out to Hashem, they're ultimately redeemed. So that's why there are three times that's going to say, Matish Tochachi Nafshi. Why are you downtrodden, my soul? He says it three times, corresponding to the three empires with which we'd have to contend. That's the Babylonian Empire, that was the first to destroy the service in the temple. Then the Greek Empire, that also stopped our service in the temple till the Asmonean kingdom came along. And finally, the Edomite Empire, which we're still waiting to finish with. So that's what the Midrash says. So this is the first one. Matish Tochachi Nafshi. Hope to Hashem because He still has salvation for you. David continues in Pasuk Zayin. Elohai alai nafshi tishtochach. My God, says David HaMelech. It says, though the soul has been told, go ahead and pray. So the soul does that. It steps forward and says, Elokai, which means my God. Alai nafshi tishtochach. My soul that's been downtrodden because it remembers all the good you gave me in the past. Therefore, al kein eskocha meyeretz yodein. That's why I remember the great salvations you gave us in the past, and I hope for your salvation again. So this is the first great salvation in entering the land of Israel. He's lamenting the exile. He says, I remember when we were by the Jordanian territory and how you saved us there. Tehom el tehom kore lekol tzinorecha kol mishbarecha vegalecha alai avaru. And now there's so much troubles are falling upon us. Then you did the great salvation. You split the Jordan, you brought us in, you took down the Jericho, you let us conquer the whole land and let us reach a point of building the temple. And now Tehom el tehom kore lekol tzinorecha. Just like there's a lot of noise in the sea, and it's as though you have pipes that are funneling in water. Water leaves one place. You never have an area in the sea where there's no water. So there's always water being supplied, so to speak. He's using poetic form. Tehom el tehom kore lekol tzinorecha. It's as though different areas of the sea, each one calls out and says, I need more water here, I need more water there. And every second, water is being spilled to every location, right? Anytime there's water missing from one place, the water comes and fills in. So he's using poetic form. He's describing it as though the depths of the sea call out and say where they need water, and they're calling out, lekol tzinorecha, to your pipes, and they're constantly supplied with water. Just as the water continuously covers the sea, which he's describing as so to speak, God's pipes continuously covering the sea. Kol mishbarecha begalecha alai avaru. By the same token, I am being swept over with so many tzaros, it's as though all those waves are pounding down on me. So that's the poetic form here. Just like the water repeatedly supplies water, these pipes, so to speak, supply water to cover the bottom of the sea, over and over again. By the same token, I am repeatedly covered with the tzaros. Yomam yitzave Adonai chasdo. Initially, Hashem did His great chesed, His great kindness with me, and I'd be able to walk with confidence. Uvalayla shiro imi tefila le'el chayai. And when I'd go to sleep, so I knew God was with me. And I prayed to Him as I knew He was Kel Chayai, the God of life. And I knew everything was going well because He was supporting me. Omera. And so now as I remember that, I say, Le'el Sal'i Lama Shechachtani. I say to Hashem, who is my rock, who is my strength, Why did you forget me? Lama koder eilech belachatz oyev. And why is it that I go over here being oppressed by the enemy? I'm going in such darkness. I know you could give light. You gave me such great light in the beginning. Bereitzach be'atzmotai cherefu nitzorerai. My enemies, they curse me, and they repeatedly say to me, as they're killing me, bereitzach be'atzmotai, as my enemies are killing me to the bone, cherefu nitzorerai. They curse me and say, "Bomram elai kol hayom ayei Elohecha," and they repeatedly say to me as they're killing me, "Where is your God now?" Matishtochachi nafshi umatemi alai. And so again, he ends off the chapter with the same matishtochachi. He says to his soul, "Why are you? Why are you bent over? Why are you being put down? Why are you lamenting?" Hochili le'elohim ki ododenu yeshuot panai ve'elohai. Same pasuk as pasuk vav. You'll notice he says it a second time. He says to his soul, "You know who the salvation is from. So what are you so destroyed? Hashem, he's the one you should turn to." So that's the second time, and in the end of the next chapter, he concludes the next chapter, which seems to be a continuation, with the same line. He says at the end of Perek Mem Gimel, "Matishtochachi nafshi umatemi alai ochili lelokim ki ododen yushot panai velokai." The same pasuk, and that's what our sages say, correspond to the three exiles. This pasuk, and we'll see that Bezrat Hashem next time. So what we see today, David the Melech begins by describing the yearning of the soul to Hashem, just like the ram yearns for water, so too he realizes Hashem is life. And he describes his weeping as he remembers the fond memories of the beauties of Jerusalem. And he turns to his soul and says, "Why are you so downtrodden? Pray. He's the one. He's the one who can save you." He says, "Hashem, my soul is downtrodden because I remember the great salvations you gave me in the past. And now I'm living a life of sorrow, a life of affliction. As I remember you gave me kindness day and night. I was singing. And so I turned to Hashem the rock and I say, 'Why'd you forget me? Why am I being so oppressed by the enemy? They're killing me as they're saying, 'Where's your God now?' And so I turn to my soul again and I say, 'Why are you downtrodden? Turn to Hashem.'" And next time we'll learn Bezrat Hashem the final chapter of this song, the request of salvation from those who destroyed the Beit HaMikdash.